assistantship or fellowships were very rare in that period. And the only favorable response was from Ohio State University. But I also had an encouraging response from the University of Virginia. And being in Richmond, I decided I'm going to drive up to Charlottesville and see what it is all about. In Charlottesville, because of my foreign background, I was assigned to Dr. Berger, Alfred Berger, who was an Austrian, and the department chairman thought we would have something to talk about, which we did. And he says, well, I understand you are a candidate for an assistantship here in Charlottesville, but since you also have an offer from Ohio State University, I privately recommend you go to Ohio State. You must realize there was only one Southern school to set the president for a record. That was Duke. University of Virginia was not at that level as Ohio State or Duke University. So Alfred says, you go to Ohio State and you work with Newman as a new, young, and up-and-coming faculty member. I expect big things from it. So I drove to Columbus from Richmond during the period where there was gas rationing. The rationing board gave me extra coupons to make the move. But I also wanted a vacation and I wanted to visit my family in New Jersey. I remember I was vacationing at Virginia Beach, which had nothing but ramshackle houses and sand in front of them. Liked it. Then I drove my car to Norfolk, and to save gas, I put it on a ferry that goes from Norfolk to Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
Overnight ferry. And parked my car, took the Pennsylvania Railroad to New Jersey in Lake. So that gave me enough gasoline to get to Columbus and see my family in the East. Felt very proud of this because I got the feel of the country by that time. To improvise, you know, very proud of myself. I signed up with Mel Newman to do my PhD work. Have you asked me another follow-up question?
Well, I was going to say, at a large university, did you find it sort of overpowering?
Very much overpowering, but excellently organized. Being a new TA, teaching assistant, I came under the tutelage of Garrett, A.B. Garrett.
I don't. Name doesn't mean anything offhand.
A.B. Garrett used to carry a column in General Chemical Education called, what was it called? A sustaining column on history of chemistry.
I don't recall it. Garrett wrote a, he was the guy that wrote a book on, one page articles on history about things where people had stumbled, serendipity, where people had
something
stumbled.
Something like
that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, because,
I have the book.
Because later on, essentially, he became a martyr.
Right. I remember the name now.
A.B. Garrett.
A.B. Garrett.
Garrett. And we were divided, TAs, into classes and were taught how to teach under his supervision. And we had to send students to a blackboard. Everybody was solving a problem, writing individually on blackboard simultaneously. and he would come unannounced. Some way he liked the way I handled my student, and he became very friendly. He had an interest in Utah or the Western states, and he became a friend. I was very blessed with friends, good friends, and he was one of them, A.B. Garrett. He was very well known in chemical education and history, so history chemistry.
You did your work in organic chemistry.
Yes.
Now, how did Ohio State at that time compare to Illinois?
Well, it
sort of was Roger Adams' legacy.
That's right. They competed. Ohio State competed. They had some department chairman was a fellow named Mack, a gentleman and a scholar, and very down to earth. I know the request came from somebody in administration about the safety of the laboratory. Students are there and doing work after hours, and that's not safe, you know. And he says, that's their opinion. The building is the safest when there are people here interested in the content. So everybody got a key, and he stuck his neck out. And indeed, we did a lot of research at the laboratory. What else may have been going on, who knows. The other stars were found named Broad on spectroscopy and Wood in hydrocarbons. And Wood was responsible for bringing in an API project, synthesizing all hydrocarbons for the idea of testing the octane numbers.
Yeah. Because API, American Petroleum Institute.
That's right, yes. For aviation gasoline. And he had a son-in-law, Wood, that is, named Greenway. And he was a student, then became a son-in-law, and we were contemporary as students, although he married Wood's daughter later on. And he also played a role in a later life, and I will mention later on. But Newman was absolutely fresh, with fresh ideas. He was born in New Orleans, got a degree in Columbia, and did his postgraduate work, his thesis at Harvard. And everybody recognized he became had an endowed chair, his Robert book, and several of us Newman students who used to get together on a biannual basis that no longer exists. He died. He was a golfer, and after he retired, he became emeritus and still had a research group going. One day, he slipped in the laboratory and hit his head and lost his equilibrium and was never the same afterwards. His complaint was that his golfing game suffered.
So he didn't do anything constructive then?
Well, yes, he did, but he couldn't play golf the way he used to.
How did you pick your you did a lot of work on acetylene compounds, right. And that seemed to be your PhD thesis. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but how did you pick acetylene compounds?
Because Newman presented a research topic. He says acetylene compounds are well known, but nobody developed method how to make particular acetylene compound in relationship to another functional group. And my project was to synthesize all the six octanoic acid, where the triple bond will be 0, 1 and all the way up down the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And to develop such methods, which of course would be a final product, the acid, but you may hold the acetylene intermediate as well. In other words, develop the method of synthesis.
Yeah. Right.
A project or the research problem was to prepare all the acetylenic acid differing by the position of the triple bond mm-hmm. in relationship to a carboxy group, acid group. Research of that type requires study of the literature and something that Newman taught me. Research starts in a library and ends in a library. I don't know how original this is with Newman, but something that I use later on and applied it to another problem or project that I experienced. Well, we also wrote out many methods how this could be made. The simplest one on paper looks at preparation of the 1, 2, 3, 4 triple bond, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay.
The beta, so-called beta acetylenic acid, alpha carbon, beta carbon. It's alpha is next to the carboxy group. All right. This I started and couldn't get anywhere. As many methods, there were obvious methods that should yield the compound, everyone failed. I started this before I went to military service. I did not finish it until I came back from military service making this compound. And rather interesting sort of observation that one problem leads into another one and into another one. And that's the way, in my opinion, research should be done. It's, if it is obvious and everything works, then you have technician doing technician's work.
In other words, if you're not raising more questions than you solve,
yeah, that's right.
Or you answer, then you're probably not. You said doing technician's work.
Yeah.
Probably true.
Well, I always felt sorry with colleagues who come a new faculty member. Well, what are you going to do research? Meanwhile, chairman. Well, I don't know. So, I mean, you had a PhD thesis written and you don't know what you want to work with. That's incredible. Anyways, this beta acetylenic acid was eventually prepared in the method that I outline here. And this is in a roundabout way. You start with hexane as an acidic hydrogen here. You treat it with a Grignard reagent. You form the acetylene Grignard reagent. And with formaldehyde, you make an acetylene alcohol. That's no problem there. Converting it into a bromide and then caposilane, you make a cyanide. It does not hydrolyze directly. You have to do it in an indirect way. You could not use sodium cyanide to make the cyanide. It didn't work, has to use copper. So there are a lot of steps here that look on paper. Why? Why do you do that extra work? Well, because it didn't work.
It didn't work any other way.
Another question is, why don't you go directly from this acetylenic bromide here and react it with carbon dioxide directly? I mean, all this is unnecessary. Why not do it the conventional way? Because it doesn't work. You cannot. You are not able to make an acetylenic beta acetylenic Grignard reagent. If this would be not saturated, anything like that, no problem whatsoever. Just put hydrogen there, you can make it in a jiffy. Couldn't do it. So I have written my dissertation, which included the acid matrix roundabout way. Newman had a visitor. I don't remember who it was. It may have been Dick Arnold, but I'm not sure. Anyway, he had a visitor, and he was busy and asked me, as having fulfilled all my requirements, if I would show him around. And showed him the department, and went also to the API laboratory, which was housed in a separate building, a newly constructed building, where occupied making hydrocarbons of known structure, no matter what it cost. They just wanted to see whether they would have a high octane rating. The octane rating was of importance because of aviation fuel. So if we can improve the kind of gasoline, type of gasoline, we have a longer range on a fuel of bombers that were sent out. So it makes sense. Well, I took him to the API building. In the API building, Bouwer's son-in-law Ken Greenlee developed a method to make acetylene Grignard reagent using this so-called cyclic reactor. In other words, to avoid a coupling reaction in the method of making a Grignard reagent. The Grignard reagent would couple with the unreacted bromide. Mm-hmm. To avoid this coupling reaction, one has to use infinite dilution, because once you form the Grignard reagent, it reacts with the starting material. And you never have a chance to react it with carbon dioxide. It forms so-called cyclic product. But here you are gaining infinite dilution without using a large amount of ether. What happens here? You have a column filled with magnesium. Into that column you will boil ether. The ether will condense, drip down, and return to the boiler. Into the refluxing ether you add your acetylene bromide. So bromide goes down, it's getting diluted, it reacts with magnesium and never gets in contact with the unreacted one. Being a beautiful device. And he was making it to make allylic Grignard reagent. Well, I was interested in acetylenic Grignard reagent, but the same type, allylic, has a double bond in the same position as the triple bond. He was making allylic Grignard reagent. Allyl has a double bond, whereas we were interested is a triple bond, where the allylic has a double bond. So the reactions are similar, because this is a very reactive halide, and so is this, a very reactive halide. We poured it, made a Grignard reagent, 100% yield, and just took the content, dumped it on dry ice to carbonate. And I said, may I use your equipment? I would like to try using our acetylene halide. And I said, bring your stuff, we'll run it through. That started my research, completely new line of research. Because where we were failing originally, we were now making quantitative yield, and get not only the acid, but getting two other assets as well. One was an Aline, which had two double bar cumulative double bar, other was a diamond. And so it was serendipity. Serendipity being, Newman asked me to conduct strangers through the laboratory. I include the API laboratory, and I learn accidentally a new field of chemistry. It comes back to the definition, what is serendipity. Was I really prepared? Chance favors a prepared mind, using the quote from Louis Pasteur, or was it strictly accidental? You be the judge. I don't know. I think each of it is fitting to this kind of
That's fascinating. As you probably know, I grew up in the town in North Carolina where the calcium carbide acetylene process was discovered.
I didn't realize that you were a racer. I know you had an interest.
Well, I had an interest in it because I'd heard about it all my life, and every time I'd read something about it, it'd be a little bit different slant on the story. So by 1951, I had begun to try to research this historically, and I was totally green at historical techniques, but I cut my teeth on that. And of course, 2 years ago, we got it as a National Historic Chemical Landmark. And so I guess it was in 85 when we were together in Europe someplace, you discovered that I had an interest in acetylene, or vice versa. And so that's where that went. But I have always accumulated, for a long, long time, I've accumulated literature. I had something here a while ago that, this is something that came out of, I had cut out of CNE News, 1947, Reppe's acetylene chemistry. And this man had spent a lot of time with Reppe, sort of picking his brain. After World War II.
He was in that intelligence team that was debriefing.
Right.
I knew Reppe.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Having become an acetylene chemist, anything dealing with acetylene was of interest. And I was speaking to, forgot his name, and other people. There was a government report on Reppe chemistry. Hazardous chemistry because cost of life didn't matter to me.
Yeah. Well, I think you're talking about the government report. I think this was the man that probably wrote it. Man's named Bigelow.
Oh, yeah.
Bigelow.
Sure.
You
I mean, I know the name.
Okay,
sure.
Okay. Well, that was what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it struck me that on acetylene chemistry, that acetylene had been around for a long time. It'd been a few chemical applications of acetylene. Of course, it started with lighting, and then in the early teens and 20s, there were a few chemical applications. But then, in the late 30s, with Father Newland, I guess that's where he's from,
right.
Notre Dame. He wrote a book, and so it sort of began to explode onto the market.
Very late in the history of acetylene chemistry. Newland did it too as a intermediate for making vinyl acetylene and chloropene by adding HCl, things like that. There was a pair of chemists at Notre Dame, husband and wife, the name escapes me, who were doing their acetylene chemistry research in the footsteps of Father Newland. Forget the name.
It just so happened that I had one of Newland's PhD students as my organic chemistry professor, and I came to work for DuPont. A fellow named Steve Slonina, and I came to work for DuPont, and I got to talking to a fellow named Bob Thomas, and it turned out that he and Slonina had been very good friends. But anyway, they were all doing work in that area, and so I suppose the war effort and I don't know what all, but in other words, there was something all of a sudden that sparked tremendous interest.
Well,
in,
because it's a very accessible industrial raw material. But the chemistry as such was really the motivation that Newman prompted him to suggest the synthesis of octanoic acid, because the chemistry just wasn't there. And he recognized it as being deficient.
One interesting thing about your explanation of this diagram, and I looked at that before, and it didn't quite follow, but it sort of says, you know, you go and talk to young chemists today, and everything is instrumental.
Yeah.
The ones I talk to don't seem to have much hands-on experience. They don't visualize this kind of thing.
Cannot get it on a computer.
That's right. You can't get it on a computer. And I think that's sort of sad. I have these... I was telling Mary the other day about these... I just bought a new... It was an Amond apparatus book from 1903. And all this beautiful, just beautiful glassware in there, you know. And I said, you know, it's just a shame that this material, these things are not used anymore.
Well, let's put it this way. We are people from a non-existing era.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
And it's...
I want to move this. Move that letter. That's the thing.
Now, mind you, this accidental incident, which made me familiar with the so-called cyclic reactor, changed my chemistry completely. I became an acetylene chemist and an aline chemist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, alines was completely unknown to me and became a major area of research that gave me international recognition for my chemistry. That international recognition played a very important role when it comes to history of chemistry. And I will tell you how start developing. You go different ways.
Right.
So alines became a product. When we carbonated it, makes a Grignard reagent, carboxylation, okay, and carbonate. We got what we wanted, but we also got this material. And what we call dimeric acid, may or may not say the origin, because we had a publication and we misidentified it and turned out to be a very interesting compound in its own right, but it put us on there. So this rearrangement, this molecular rearrangement took place. This is the expected one. Isomeric acid is completely rearranged. All right. I called it the propargylic rearrangement, analogous to what was then known the allylic rearrangement. An allyl compound which have a double bond also give you product with a molecular rearrangement, but that's only one double bond, allyl. An allylic rearrangement was well studied, well recognized. I called it propargylic rearrangement. Allyl and propargyl are equivalent to each other, and the rearrangement is according. The literature refers to sometime as the acetylene-aline rearrangement. And interestingly enough, in Europe, it's called the Waters rearrangement.
I was going to ask if your name got in the book on that.
Oh, yes.
I have a number of books here on the named reactions. I'll have to check and see if you're in it.
Well, I was very much surprised when I gave talks, and he said, "What do you mean, propagylic? It's a Waters rearrangement." Serendipity twice.
Now you were off. Now this was done after you came back from the military.
Well,
or right before.
You're quite correct. I lost my train of thought. I couldn't finish it before I went to Rome in America. Finish it after my thesis was written. On the last day, I was cleaning up. I was conducting that visit.
It was the last day.
Ready to leave. And I had an appointment at the University of Pittsburgh as an instructor. I didn't have postgraduate formal education, so they hired me as instructor. Had I had a postgraduate one, they would hire me as assistant professor. So I had to go from the bottom of the academic scale, from teaching assistant to instructor, to assistant, to associate, and full professor. So I really had to produce, because every promotion required some publication record and an advancement in teaching responsibilities and research. Something flashed on my mind and I forgot what I wanted to say. It's how I got to the University of Pittsburgh. I would like to explain if you give me a chance.
Well, I want to hear about your military.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I forgot. I was a foreigner, but foreigners had to register with a draft. Subject, we pay taxes and are also subject of military service. First, I had a very high number, and coupled with being an alien, kept me out of the military for years. Then Newman accepted a grant from the Chemical Warfare Service, now known as Chemical Corps. That was to synthesize analogs of 2,4-D, 2,4-dichlorophenoxyacetic acid. That research was going on at the laboratories of chemical warfare in Dietrich, in Frederick, Maryland, Camp Dietrich. But with having the high classification, they couldn't do it openly. They had to farm out the synthesis of such compound throughout the established university, who can buy chemicals, so nobody can reconstruct from the purchase of chemicals what are you really working on in that highly classified area. Well, I was making, I didn't know why I was making it. As time went on, I went to literature and I found some papers which mentioned plant hormones. And there is a synthetic material that has the effect of a plant hormone. It was in some agriculture journal, something like that. 2,4-dichlorophenoxyacetic acid. I think I was the first one who made it in this country. The other one were reports from Britain. We wanted to make analogs, put another chlorine, another structure, and see how it acts as a called plant hormone. The plant hormone mechanism deals with the fact that it stimulates the growth of a plant, a broadleaf plant, such as dandelion, such as tomatoes, and such as sugar beet. And the plant as a accepts that hormone and starts reproducing new cells until it dies. So it becomes a weed killer, essentially. Dandelions are a weed, what we are using now. But during war time, it was destroying the sugar beets. The Germans lived on sugar beets. And if you were spraying it, it would not be chemical warfare. It would be agricultural warfare. So we were making compound. They were started at singing Beltsville. It's a
Beltsville, Maryland.
I think that. Yeah. I'm not sure where they said it. Somewhere evaluated came Dietrich. And so far as I know, the Air Force was spraying sugar beet field, testing it out in Texas. Well, anyway, among those compounds that were synthesized was also 2,4,5 trichloroacetic acid, which was not selective. It was a brush killer. It was a defoliant, which became notorious in the Vietnam War.
Right.
So, anyway, he, Newman, had a grant, and he needed somebody to work on it. And he says, John, you are deferred. You can do your duty. You're going to change your research to make it 2,4-D analogs. And I was making it. I put acetylene on hold. Of course, my mind was still in acetylene chemistry. And I started making 2,4-D analogs.
But you were still a civilian
at Ohio State.
Okay.
And a status change when people in Maryland, in Frederick, at Camp Dietrich, realized that there is a potential draftee who can do the work with them. So they no longer issued deferments. They wanted me to work in Frederick, at Dietrich. So I became a draftee. They sent me to basic training in chemical corps in Camp Dietrich, that's near near Atala, Alabama, in rocketry came there, the Marshall Center for Rocketry. Huntsville. But anyway, Camp Dietrich was a chemical warfare service training one. They said, you will not use a basic training. You're going to get a uniform and you come directly to Frederick to work on those compounds. And I went to Columbus, I took my oath, and I was a buck private in the U.S. Army. Never mind the special assignment. Yes, you're going to complete basic training. So I left my car in front of the house. I mean, I thought I'd just go. No way. I went through the induction center. I got properly deloused. I went and started in at Cyber, and I told my commanding officer in a training company, I have a car that's not being used. It's sitting in front of my house in Columbus. He said, okay, we'll give you especially to go to Columbus to pick up your car. He bought it eventually, my commanding office, because, and I also got married.
Well, okay.
On the deal came from visited me from Cleveland, and we got married at a hometown in Cleveland, Ohio.
Now, You got a commission somewhere.
Yes. Well, I went as a buck private to synthesize a compo. Then the announcement came that the OCS of Officer Cadet School is still accepting applicants for OCS, and I did apply and went to Edgewood Arsenal. I got my commission in chemical warfare service. That was in 44, 45, I don't remember exactly. And after finishing OCS, I stayed on to take advanced training in chemical warfare. And after graduating from school, I had an assignment in Bikini, as a Bikini A-bomb test, as a chemical warfare officer, established a laboratory in Hawaii, and was a guest of the Navy, went to Bikini, and they canceled the... I stayed for the alpha test, and it was an airburst, and since there was no effect, not what they were looking for or interested in, I was able to write my own ticket back to the States, because I didn't have any immediate supervisor. So I've been head of a research team and be responsible to myself or something.
What did you... Did you see any of the explosions?
Yeah,
or any,
it was out of airburst.
Okay.
There was another plane, and they went directly to a so-called sea test, which was underwater, mm-hmm. and they knew everything where we destroyed. There's nothing to analyze. I was able to go after the first one and order myself back to the States.
Did you have any ideas about the future of atomic energy? Or
yeah, well, we accepted it with very, very great joy. The war is over. I mean, we in the military saw a way out. We won it. Let's go home. And the doubts that started infiltrating us, me and Azon as well, I'm sure, came later.
The reason I asked that question was that some years ago I ran across a report that was written by a man in DuPont Engineering who had been somewhere and had participated or had seen some of these explosions, and he at the end of his report he said, "I have only one conclusion: there must be no more war." And I just, that was sort of struck me.
Well, the interesting thing is, we observed from a distance the alpha test, that was an herbus, where you see a mushroom cloud. And 2 days, 3 days later, say, it's safe to go and swim in a Bikini Lagoon. 3 days, contamination or radioactivity must have dissipated, because they said, fine, we'll go through it, no problem. And people said, well, or it had some, you became infertile and things like that. Well, I went on a beach, I didn't go in the water, as I remember correctly, and it produced the lovely gas.
That's right. So you didn't become infertile, that's for sure.
Yeah. I was coming back to the States, and I went to a transportation officer, and I said, we have absolutely no accommodation for officers going stateside. I said, any other accommodation you have with the troops? I said, I want to go home. And there were 4 or 5 deep sleeping bunks in the troop carrier, and I found people interested in bridge. I was always a bridge player, but anyway, there was only one table available, you know, that we were aware of. So we had a 24-hour bridge game going. There were enough interested bridge players when somebody went to eat or to a train or to the bunk sleep, somebody would jump in so that we don't give up the table. Well, you played on a blanket too, but it right. just wasn't the same.
Right. That wasn't the same.
I came, and I wanted to start the fall semester at Ohio State to go back to school to finish my degree. I didn't have enough points. But my mother-in-law, Kay's mother, was very active in a local Republican Party,